It's the film with three brains. 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 It's the film with three brains.
Oh my god, you guys are freaks.
Hello, and welcome to The Film with Three Brains. This is Sean in Chicago.
And Cohen from Maplewood, New Jersey.
And Sam in San Francisco.
And today we are going to talk about a very dialogue-heavy movie called Glengarry Glen Ross from 1992. We're going to hit the 90s today. It's awesome.
Nice. Is this our first one from the 90s?
Is it?
No, Babe was...
Oh, yes.
Oh, right.
It's definitely my first foray outside of the late 80s.
Right.
So it's a real stretch. Yeah, so it's a... it's a feature length film, but it was based, it's made from, a Pulitzer winning play by David Mamet. I guess the director is James Foley. We can talk about that. I'm sure Cohen, and this is really Cohen's movie that I kind of stole because it just seemed like the timing was right. Mm-hmm. And I definitely like it. And I remember, watching it back in the day. Yeah. But before we get into that, we'll just do a quick synopsis, which is a whole bunch of sales guys in an office losing their damn minds about the Glengarry Glen Ross leads. I mean, there's more to it than that, but that's
the real estate.
It's a real estate office, and they're always talking about the guys downtown. Was it Mitch and somebody? I can't remember.
Mitch and Murray. Yeah.
So. There's a lot of back and forth about who did what, when, and there's a lot of angst and id and a lot of swearing. but I think it's incredibly watchable because it's got a powerhouse cast, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's an apt description. The cast is fantastic.
I think the only thing I'd add to the description is that it's a competition. Like these are cutthroat salesmen who are selling lots in real estate developments, and they're trying to lure people in, and their Alec Baldwin kind of sets the stakes high with the opening scene, is that if you sell the most, you get a Cadillac. If you take second place, you get some steak knives, and if you don't take second or first, you get fired. So I think that helps the audience know what's going on here. I was really glad you picked this movie, because this is a movie that, to me, is the first movie I'd say that probably appreciated it more now for what it is than when I first saw it back when it first came out.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. Of all the movies we reviewed, this one is actually better now than it was then.
I also feel like this movie was at a really interesting time in my life personally, where I just started to be aware of what movies, are outside of like Steven Spielberg and, the stuff we watched as kids in the 80s. We just, we're getting out of high school, going to college later. I'd study film in school. And this and Reservoir Dogs are two movies I remember seeing that kind of opened my eyes to what sort of indie cinema could be. I know this is an independent film, but it has that feel.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam, I don't know if you remember, but I remember we saw this together, I think. And I think we saw it at your house. And I remember talking about it. And I remember you asked me if it was the same guy who did Reservoir Dogs, because we had just seen that.
Yep. I know. I saw Reservoir Dogs with you up at your place. And then we saw this together.
Right.
Yep.
They both have, really snappy dialogue and, really great actors. And it seemed at the time to us, and seemed like it could have been, the same writer. I guess I mean, David Mamet and Quentin Tarantino have a few things in common, I'd say, stylistically, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I was actually going to pick a different David Mamet film. It was on my short list of things to pick.
Spanish Prisoner? Or?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. which I haven't seen in a long time.
I haven't either.
And I probably since it came out. And
me too.
And that was on my list. And then you picked this. I was like, okay, I'm not picking that next. But I'm psyched that you picked this.
Yeah. I watched it in college, probably after one of your recommendations. I'm sure I knew it. And then I just watched it. And what brought it back is that when it was done. I just finished watching it recently. I felt like I needed some Maalox or Tums or something because it's just such a gut punch, and it's so, you know, like you just feel for these guys, and even though they're all horrible, but you just really feel. But you just, you get it. You just feel it.
Yeah, this is one of the few movies we're going to watch and review where there's no hero. Think of how few movies that don't have a true hero that you're like, that was a really good movie. You know, like.
Almost not.
And they kind of, I mean, the one guy that seems sympathetic, and I mean, this is a plot spoiler, but I think Shelley the Machine, you know, Jack Lemmon, I really like him as an actor.
Sure.
Going back to The Apartment, that's way back in 1960, so we can't do that one. But, you know, he's just great. But he's also very sympathetic and, you know, kind of endearing. And he's, I'm going to guess he was the oldest guy in the cast. So you kind of have that grandfatherly feeling about him. But turns out he's not always cracked up to be. Or at least I still see him as a victim, as a lot of these guys are, because he gets kind of talked into something by another salesman. Like, they're always selling. Everything's a sale. Everything's a pitch.
Yeah. We should quickly go through the cast for our listeners who may have not seen it.
By all means.
The four salesmen are Jack Lemmon, Ed Harris, Al Pacino, and Alan Arkin. And then the guy who runs the office is Kevin Spacey. And then the guy from downtown, from Mitch and Murray, who comes in to give them a bit of a pep talk and tell them about this month's sales competition is Alec Baldwin. A very famous scene. Even if you haven't seen the movie, you're probably familiar with the Alec Baldwin scene. You've probably heard someone quote it. I could probably repeat the whole thing right now from memory.
You know what I noticed is, did you hear Al Pacino's Ricky Roma character? He says, "Always be closing," and he wasn't there for the speech.
Right.
That's a cool touch.
Yeah. I never noticed that until we just watched it again last night, and I hadn't seen it in a couple of years. But yeah, I caught that too. That was interesting. I never noticed that before.
And he wasn't there because he was the top salesman. So he was kind of, I don't know, excused from that big talk. But
yeah,
it's such a great performance.
Alec Baldwin's scene. I mean, it's the only scene he has in the movie. And it's not in the play either. It was written for him for the movie.
That's awesome.
Originally, he wasn't going to be able to do it. I think something came up and he couldn't do it. And then it got delayed, and then he was able to clear schedule and do it.
He's
What quote would you say is the quote of quotes for him
from that scene?
Yeah.
Jeez, I mean, the most memorable, you know, is actually the sort of cleanest section where he says, you know, ABCA always be BC closing, always be closing, always be closing. For some reason, you know, and then AIDA. And then he gives this little speech about attention, interest, decision, and action. But what I always love is when someone, I forget which one of the guys says, in the middle of it, he sort of interrupts and says, "What's your name?" And he goes, "Fuck you. That's my name."
I think it's Ed Harris, the Moss character.
Yeah.
He gets the worst of it the whole time.
Yeah, he does. Well, because he dares, like, challenge him.
Yeah.
He's like, he's such a hero. You know, what are you doing? Come down here talking to a bunch of bums. And then he goes into the thing about the watch. See this watch?
I look at these. What does he say? Put the coffee down.
Oh, yeah. That's right in the beginning.
Yeah. Lemon's like, huh?
Yeah. Jack Lemmon goes to get coffee right at the beginning of his speech, and he interrupts himself and he says, "Put that coffee down." He's like, huh? Coffee is for closers.
That's so mean.
He's like, "You think I'm fucking with you? I am not fucking with you."
The saddest part about this whole thing is I can imagine that somewhere there's a group of sales guys who are living this.
Right.
I know.
Just over and over, you know, and that there is really someone who's quoting this movie to them every day.
Yeah. Well, the IMDb trivia does say the film has been used to train salesmen.
Oh, yeah? Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that movie Boiler Room that came out a few years ago, quite a few years ago? Vin Diesel, Ben Affleck, and it's a weird cast. And there's a scene where they're all drinking beer in one of their apartments, and they're watching Glengarry Glen Ross, and they're all like repeating it.
Yeah.
And actually, Sam and I were just my wife and I were just watching a new show on Amazon Prime called Modern Love. That's actually pretty good. I don't know if you guys have seen it. I hadn't heard of it. She knew about it. We started watching it, and it's a you know, each episode is a completely different cast and story. And in one of them, this guy lives in Manhattan. His son is in a high school, play, and they're doing Glengarry Glen Ross, and his son is the Alec Baldwin character. And they show the scene. The only scene we see of the play is the Alec Baldwin scene that his son performs. It's pretty funny.
With all the swear words in high school?
Yeah. It's really, it's weirdly funny.
Great time. I'm sure how to tell our audience this is not for their kids.
Right. Yeah.
Speaking of that, ABC, Baldwin's on Saturday Night Live all the time, but he did a Christmas episode, and he changed it to Always Be Cobbling because they're all elves. Yeah. And then you remember this? He messes it up. He says Always Be Closing. It's like,
yeah, he's Always Be Closing. And then he kind of chuckles a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of breaks. And then I don't know if does he fix it then, or does he just keep going?
No, I don't think so. He just kept going.
Always Be Cobbling.
Yeah, he's giving a speech to Santa's elves to try and get them to make more toys faster. Because they're falling behind. Always Be Cobbling. Yeah. That was a good one. I'm sure, I mean, if you really dug deep, I bet you could find a zillion references in pop culture to this movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to me like it has, it's not like a big crowd pleaser. Like my wife, she thinks she's never seen it before last night. She's well aware of it. She knows the Alec Baldwin's. Or she just never sat down and watched the beginning and I wonder how many people are like that. I wonder how many people have seen the scene with Alec Baldwin or know about it or, you know, but have never actually sat down to watch the movie because it's not, in a traditional sense, it's not a very watchable movie in regard that nothing happens. It's just a bunch of guys talking. That's all it is.
I was watching for punches. There were zero punches thrown.
No punches. Zero punches, and I still liked it.
Amazing.
That says something.
I know.
If that doesn't get people to go see it, I don't know what will.
Surprisingly watchable given no punching. That's my quote.
Well, this is not a date movie. You do not bring your first date to watch this movie.
There's not a female in it either.
No. Mm. It's like zero.
There was sorry, this is a slight tangent. When I was watching it, in the very beginning, you know, they spend some time in that Chinese restaurant across the street and then it's raining and they run across the street and you see an exterior and there's a train passing by and you think it's the L because the play takes place in Chicago. The movie, they never really say, but, they mention Wisconsin a few times, but that's it. But as the train goes by and it passes, the sign says Sheepshead Bay, which is in Brooklyn. And so I looked it up and they shot it at a sound studio in Queens and then on location in Sheepshead Bay. If you look up the synopsis, it always says for Chicago real estate agents, but the movie makes no attempt to make you think it's Chicago at all. Like
no,
the plates,
I had no idea. And I was shocked.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The plates say New York. They're just like, whatever.
And there's a lot of downtown reference. I guess that would be more of a Chicago thing.
Right, definitely a Chicago thing. I mean, there is a town in Brooklyn, but no one really thinks of it as that, you know.
And, you know, it is liked by the people in it, too. Jack Lemmon says he thought it was the greatest acting ensemble he'd ever been part of, which is saying something with all the people he's worked with. And it says James Foley and Alec Baldwin, it's their favorite film. Which is funny considering Alec Baldwin wasn't supposed to be in it.
Right.
But I don't know much about James Foley. I mean,
he's made a few movies. I think the most other well-known thing he did, and I use the phrase well-known loosely, there's a Mark Wahlberg movie called The Corruptor that came out in the late 90s. I don't know.
Not a good title.
he did. I mean, if you saw At Close Range, that was in the mid 80s with Sean Penn and Chris Penn and Christopher Walken and Madonna.
He works with Madonna all the time. James Foley is like in every single Madonna video, according to his bio.
He directs all her videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did Who's That Girl? And then he did the 50 Shades Darker and 50 Shades Freed, which I know you guys are probably both really big fans of.
Oh, yeah.
Just the sequels. I don't like the original.
Yeah.
It looks like he directed a bunch of House of Cards, too, which I've actually never seen. Now I wonder if I feel a little going back and watching
it. It is. It's weird thinking about Kevin Spacey's amazing career and how great an actor he is, and then you're like, oh, he's a shit, you know?
Yeah, he's a total creeper. I don't know.
He's really good in this role because
he does.
I mean, he is kind of a stand-up guy, even though he's pretty shady, and he nearly, you know, he offers those leads.
Yeah.
For I don't know. I almost felt like he was just messing with him.
I think he was.
I do too.
I don't think he ever intended to go through with it because he kept telling me, like, I can't. It's my job. You're not the only one with a family, you know.
And he said, like, kind of, I mean, 20% and then $100 on the top. That was his,
right?
That was enough.
And if he just said, sure, he just said, and this. And if he said, sure, and he said, and this. And he got, you know, kept saying, and this until, you know, he said, the other guy said, no, I can't.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I always had. Hey, to me, Kevin Spacey always struck me as like, he's pre all the other guys, you know, he's kind of the young guy in the office. They keep saying, whose nephew are you? Things like that, you know, so you feel like there's a little bit of nepotism going on, and, you know, he's only recently starting to realize like what a dirty, dirty job it can be, you know, and how the other guys are just all manipulators and just shady as hell. And he's gotten a taste for it for sure. But still, even now, like, you know, in the movie, when he totally puts his foot in his mouth with Jonathan Pryce. Oh, another cast member. Forgot about him.
Yeah.
Where he makes something up and it doesn't help. It totally screws. It screws Al Pacino, but it helps the client get what he wants and, you know, legally is entitled to, but they're going to screw him. And then that happened.
Yeah. And actually Ricky Roma's trying to almost talk him out of this. He's trying to talk him down.
Yeah. From
getting his check back. And yeah, he doesn't know the scene.
He's also trying to like put him off to a point where he can't get it back.
Right. Cause he's given him the 3 days. Monday. Yeah. And
he's totally fucking with him.
Gaslighting.
He's gaslighting him, trying to get past that deadline. So he can't get his money back. And after that, he doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark. It's pretty dark. You don't like the first time I ever saw, I never realized just how much, I mean, it's basically theft. You know, you know, these guys are like thieves.
And they're all slimy.
Yeah. And the way they go about their jobs. I mean, you said, Sean, Jack Lemmon, you know, he seems he seems sort of sympathetic in the beginning, but later, I mean, he's just such a liar on the phone.
Yeah.
And they all are. Oh, you know, I'm at the airport. I'm leaving tonight. It's like you're sitting in your shitty office in the rain, you know, and it's just gross.
I think if there's any morality to or any kind of integrity to it, it's like he's the old school. And Ricky Roma's like, man, that stuff at the end, that was so great.
Right.
And that was his favorite thing. You could see in his face, like he just wanted that respect. He just wanted to, you know, it was almost not about the money and the sale. It was just like, this is my trade and I'm good at it.
Yeah.
But obviously, yeah, I mean, then getting involved in theft and God knows what. I mean, he knows that's over the line, but he was desperate. His daughter's in the hospital, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, do we know why she's in the hospital? Just that she is?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think they ever really say.
Yeah. It just adds a little bit more to his motive. Like, okay, I gotta do something here.
Yeah.
And then when Williamson, Kevin Spacey, when the shit hits the fan and he's like, the Nyborgs, yeah, they're nuts. They're insane. And he's so crestfallen. Like his whole world is crumbling.
Yeah.
You know,
they just like to talk to salesmen. That's what he says.
Yeah. Oof.
But that's the whole movie. It's just one guy pulling the carpet out from under the next guy over and over and over. And yet it's still good. Like, you're just, like, you feel like you have to shower after you watch this, but it's so slimy. It's good. But I will say that you know, they captured, like, I know a couple people who they make their living doing sales, not for real estate, but I can tell you that the adrenaline is in the sale. It has nothing to do with the money. They can make $1 on the deal. They could make $1 million on the deal. And it has nothing to do with the money. It's the adrenaline of getting someone to buy something, especially when that person went into it thinking, you know, not knowing that they wanted to buy something. Because it's really easy when someone wants something it's really hard when someone doesn't know they want something or doesn't want something. And this movie really kind of captures that. And it's in a way that makes me say, like, if you watch this movie and you are grossed out, you should never take a job in sales. And if you watch this movie and you're like, oh my God, look what they can do to manipulate people. It's so cool. You're like, well, then we found your career. It's gross, but great.
Yeah. It's all a confidence game. It's like a lot like Spanish Prisoner and things, other things he's done, or just, you know, that kind of movie, like, you know, messing with people. It's really like you did a good job of describing that, the whole thrill.
You know, David Mamet has sort of, in his vast filmography or bibliography, I don't know what you call that, things he's written, you know, he has a lot of, if you look at something like Wag the Dog, which he wrote, it's not a play, but he wrote the screenplay. I mean, the manipulation is going in that, obviously. I mean, it's called Wag the Dog, which is a reference to manipulating. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah. Yeah. Is that in our wheelhouse?
Yeah, it's 1997.
But Robert De Niro, you know, he's basically, you know, sort of the Alec Baldwin and Al Pacino character, but in politics, you know.
If I remember it correctly, it's all about a war, and it's probably a little too quaint by today's standards, you know.
It's about manufacturing a fake war and selling it to the American public.
Right. It's about duping people at the highest levels.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which we probably don't have as much of an appetite for that right now.
Yeah.
It would never happen.
One other personal favorite of mine of David Mamet's stuff he's written is The Edge. I love that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Him and Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins are in a plane crash in the Alaskan wilderness, and they got to survive, even though they're very adversarial. Mm-hmm. I really like that movie. It was a good one.
I always think about that.
You should check it out.
I have. It's good. It's on my list. I've seen it.
When I'm out in the woods or the wilderness, and I think about that movie because it's like people die of shame, and I'm like, oh, it's so true.
That's a great.
I know.
Scene.
I never learned how to build a fire. I'm so stupid. I'm just gonna die.
Yeah. This plagues you a lot, huh?
I go walk into the woods with no tools and resources often. So
you would be a prime candidate for Naked and Afraid.
God, I've watched half of one of those shows, and I'm like, oh, what?
I've never seen it. I've heard it described and thought, why in the world would anybody do this?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. So I mean, it's memorable for those guys. I think I'm just reading here about Al Pacino kind of recommending Kevin Spacey after seeing him on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
So, so that whole like, he's the new guy and the hazing kind of thing. But yeah, it really is.
I was just reading, they did a revival not that long ago in London where Christian Slater played the Ricky Roma character. I'm curious. I guess I know I was reading about the original run, whenever that was. And the cast, other than who's. Wow, you know, I'm just gonna stop talking because everything I have nothing to say. I was gonna say the cast on an industry, but now I can't remember who the hell it was. So what's the point?
But they had us going though.
I know. In terms of sequels and remakes, it would be interesting. This has never been done, as far as I know, other than Psycho, is to sort of remake a movie exactly the same but with a different cast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same director, same screenplay, same cinematographer, but a different cast. You know, Psycho was close to that. It was sort of an experiment that ultimately didn't really work and kind of failed, but it was a shot-for-shot remake of Psycho with a different cast. But something like Glengarry Glen Ross, I mean, that's sort of what they do with True West, right? You guys familiar with True West, the stage play? You know, it's two men, similar descriptions, and then every night they switch roles. There's two main characters, and every night they switch roles. And then after a couple of months, they would switch the cast. So, you know, it'd be like Philip Seymour Hoffman and whoever the hell, Bruce Willis was one of the guys once with someone else. This would be interesting. I would love, it's an expensive experiment, you know, to shoot a movie, the same movie repeatedly. But I don't know. Michael Bay's been doing it with Transformers now for years.
Speaking of expensive, This is kind of Sam's trivia dipping in here, but the they didn't make their money back. The budget was like 12 million, right, yeah. 12.5, and most of it they spent on the rain. Because they had so much rain in the first part, you know. I guess I'm assuming that's where the intermission would be, right? The night to day, that would be take a little break in the theater, or is it like more of a one-off, one act?
I don't think it's one act, but I know part of the reason they wrote the Alec Baldwin scene is that when they adapted it, when David Mamet adapted it for the screen, what I understand, it was too short to be a feature film.
That makes sense.
They needed to pad it out a bit. I mean, it's not very, I mean, it's a pretty tight, like 89 minutes or something, 90 minutes. So without that scene, you know, that's pretty short. So I would imagine that you got to assume that the play is fairly short as well. Maybe there was an intermission. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen it. I think I read it once. I read a few of his plays back when I was in college and I was studying theater and film. And
yeah. I mean, you know, everyone's selling something, but probably the best pitch must have been him pitching it to the studio. I mean, they must have sold, you know, to make that movie. I mean, of course, you got the cast, you got your ducks in a row that way. But to sell this as a movie that people are gonna put butts in seats, I don't know how he accomplished that. You know?
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm sure it was. You gotta imagine getting the cast attached. Probably finally convinced the bean counters to be like, oh, well, I mean, all right. I mean, it's Al Pacino. Right. Jesus.
Right. Who wouldn't want to see it?
That's the thing. Jack Lemmon. With this cast, this movie should have been seen by more people, and especially how good it is, and the fact that it's, you know, maintained, you know, almost a cult status. It's in Empire Magazine has it in their 500 greatest movies of all time list. You know, Jack Lemmon got a Best Actor award for from the National Board Review. Al Pacino was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor for this. So, the movie was a low budget movie that I'm shocked did not make its money back. You mentioned it cost $12.5 million to make. It only made 10.7 at the box office. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's since gone back to make up that little bit of difference, but yeah, I think this is one of those movies where I scratch my head and like, how could it not have done better? You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think, so the most of the quotes are from Al Baldwin's scene, but one of the funny things I noticed this time around was Ricky Roma. He's like, "Give me a pack of gum, I'll show you how to chew it." I'm like, "What?"
All right, when he's tearing into Ed Harris for being a dick.
Yeah, exactly. I think
scene, he has one of like the top 10 fuck yous of all time. Ed Harris said something, and he goes, "Fuck you, Dave." It's so great.
Yeah, they swear a lot. The F-bomb and its derivatives are used, I think, 138 times, maybe.
One thing my wife notices is the number of times they use the word Leeds. She's like, we're watching on this side. She goes, Leeds, Leeds, Leeds. My God, did they ever stop saying Leeds?
Maybe that's why they put it in the Big Lebowski. Leeds.
It's true. They do say it a lot.
They do.
Even Alec Baldwin, the leads are weak. The fucking leads are weak. You're weak.
Yeah, they also say a sit. Like, have you been on a sit?
And yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure that's a real thing.
I've never heard that before or since. It's the only time I ever heard. I mean, I assume they just mean going and being in someone's house, right? And giving them their pitch. I assume that's what they mean. I mean, it's a pretty sad scene when they show Jack Lemmon at that guy's house.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy's like, man, just leave me alone. He's like, well, you know, we'll go to your relative's house. You're just squirming. Oh, it's like, dude.
It's painful. Yeah. And he's another one that kind of stood out was Shelley. He's still selling after his big sale. He's bragging about it with, you know, they're chewing the cut or whatever with Roma, and he's still selling it. He's like getting buy-in for this whole thing. I'm like, hey, wasn't this great? And you know, they blow off I guess that would be Ed Harris kind of losing his mind. And he's like, hey, I'm trying to tell a story here, you know, whatever he says. But he's still like, everyone is convincing everyone of anything. Whatever their goal is, they're just. So yeah, there's discomfort through the entire movie.
Yeah. Hey, did you guys recognize the other actors? Like Jonathan Pryce, who was James Link, the remorseful buyer.
He's
been in a zillion things.
Oh yeah.
I recognize him as the governor from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah.
Oh really? I think of him as the guy from Brazil. Really?
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I still think of him as the guy from Brazil.
Yep. And then what about the?
Oh, and he's also in Game of Thrones. He's really good in Game of Thrones.
What is he in Game of Thrones?
He's the religious.
The High Sparrow.
High Sparrow.
Yeah. He looks older, obviously.
Yeah, he does.
20 years. 25. What about the detective? Did you recognize him?
Yeah, as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, that guy. And I can't remember now what I know him from.
So to me, it was his voice, his demeanor. He's Mike Novick from 24. He was in,
right.
I don't know if you watched that TV series. So that's
definitely. Yep.
That
gotcha. Yeah. They talk a lot about Jerry Graff. That's the office that they're going to sell the leads to when they get their hands on them. And it says Jerry Graff is an actor who had starred in only four movies, all of them by David Mamet. So I don't know. Yeah, including Spanish Prisoner, State in Maine. But I don't know. Let's click on him. What does he look like? But I guess that's a random bit of trivia only important to David Mamet. Oh, he's in the... Yeah, whatever. We'll skip that. So, yeah. Should we hit some of these questions that we like to ask? Appropriateness or, well, I mean, let's start with, is it worth watching? I think that one's pretty obvious.
Oh yeah. I think totally. I think more now than back then. And that's what going into our next question, is it suitable for kids? I'd be like, I don't know why a kid would want to watch this. I think you gotta be in your mid twenties or somewhere around there before you could start to really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will admit, I don't think I understood it the first time I saw it in my twenties. I mean, I understood it. You understand, you feel it for sure, but you don't really know exactly. It just moves fast. And then, by the end you kind of piece it all together, but maybe I just didn't pick up on it as well,
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on, like the psychological warfare going on in this movie.
Yeah.
Is, pretty intense. And, the first time I saw it, I knew obviously that there was conflict. That's hard to miss, but the sort of level at which they're operating, it takes a view or two to really see, I think.
Yeah. But
all
I mean,
that.
So it's mostly the language and the adultness of the.
Right. I think anyone who has any interest in like performance and filmmaking and theater are going to be drawn to it, of course. For me, I saw it heading into college when I was studying film, and to see a movie so compelling that's so simple on the surface, it's a great screenplay with great actors, and that's it. That's all you need. That's all you need to make something, good, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helps when you win the Pulitzer Prize, but
right.
That's why it's so good, obviously.
Yeah. And then for a wider audience, people like watching good actors be good at what they do, certainly. I mean, Quentin Tarantino, if you remove all the violence from his movies, they're still pretty damn watchable because his dialogue, it sings. It's good. Mm-hmm. I mean, David Mamet's dialogue is a little more realistic, I think.
A little.
I think it's a little more realistic.
You know, well, the situations are more realistic.
Right. I mean, but the way they speak, it's, you know, it's clipped. It's repetitive. It's very repetitive, you know, and I think that's the way people do speak, you know. Quentin Tarantino's is so stylized. His stuff is, you know, endlessly watchable, but you're never going to be in a room. You're never going to watch a Quentin Tarantino movie and say, oh, you know, this sounds like a conversation I had at a party once, you know. Never.
That's
never
what, one more time. I say it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. What in Django Unchained? What's his, the guy? Like, can't think of the actor's name now. Help me out here. The German Austrian. Sorry.
Oh, Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz. I mean, he has some awesome dialogue, but it all sounds like very highfalutin,
yeah,
kind of stuff. Like, you
it
wouldn't
sounds
hear
like someone it. Wrote it. You know? This is a speech written by someone who knows they're a pretty good writer. It's like watching Aaron Sorkin, you know, shows and movies. He's a fantastic writer, but there's no mistaking it for any kind of reality. It's an Aaron Sorkin speech that guy just gave or that woman just gave, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's entertaining as hell.
You don't think The Social Network? That's actual things that Zuckerberg has said.
I don't know. Maybe
some of it must be.
I was thinking more. For some reason, I always focus on The Newsroom, the HBO show with Jeff. What's his name? Suddenly, I forgot. But like, yeah. I really enjoyed that show and I loved watching it. But the speeches these people give are not like no one ever talks like that. I don't think. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know everyone in the world, but it just doesn't seem real,
right?
Or like A Few Good Men, you know, great speeches given by all these people, you know, great performances, but again, it feels like a film, you know, feels like you're watching a theater production shot, you know, shot just like, I don't know.
Yeah,
other than the Alec Baldwin scene, I mean, that doesn't feel like it doesn't feel real at all. That feels, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting, because he kind of, I mean, did he they wrote that for him, right? He didn't come up with that.
Okay. No.
They wrote it for him. But I like that he carries around little brass balls in his.
That almost seemed over the top for me. I was like
it was. It was a little over the top, but it's like, well, clearly he gives this speech a lot.
I was reading, you know, I have a criticism of that speech. It's the only criticism I would give of that speech. And it harkens back to something I read about just yesterday. After I watched, I looked something up. And I was reading about what the actors said about it, about the production and about the performances, because they did rehearsals for like a month before they shot. And it was either Alan Arkin or Jack Lemmon said the hardest part about it was finding the rhythm of the scene with the other actors. You know, the dialogue, you know, it moves and there's a lot of back and forth, and like finding that rhythm of being able to, you know, interact and do it right in the way that it was written and the way it's supposed to be, you know, done. And in that scene, you know, throughout the movie, the rhythm of these scenes is so good. You know, the pacing is fantastic, and it's almost like music, you know, sometimes. But that scene, that specific spot where he says brass balls, right before that he says, get mad, you son of a bitch, get mad. And then it looks like almost like an editing error, not an error, but just he says, you know what it takes to sell real estate? So it takes brass balls, right? And they're just, it's the one line is right on top of the other. And the best thing about the scene is that it's almost like when you watch Saturday Night Live, you know, and one of the performers lands a fantastic joke, and they wait, right? They wait for the audience to laugh, you know, and then they continue. And in that moment, it felt like he needed to wait, you know, and he doesn't. It's a tiny, minor thing that probably no one in the world would ever point out as a flaw. But I don't know. I've always thought that every time, even last night, I'm like, there it is. It's a weird sort of hitch in the rhythm of that scene right there. And then it's gone, you know.
Yeah.
I think I know. It's pretty nitpicky.
So what you're saying is that a really gut-wrenching movie with 16,000 swear words, no women, the only flaw is the timing of going from one joke to another.
Yeah. Homophobic
references. Oh, yeah.
I was thinking of the only flaw in that scene.
There you have it.
Nailed it.
I really noticed it too. So glad you said something.
I know. You said that's why it didn't make its money back.
Right.
The first round of audiences were like, fuck this.
Oh, man.
He waited 3 seconds instead of 10 between lines, asshole.
That guy's never going to amount to anything. Alec Baldwin. Yeah. Hey, I know we were going one direction, but I don't remember which direction it was. So I just got to ask you guys, when you see Alan Arkin, who do you think of? What role do you think of?
I married an ex-murderer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paisan.
Yeah. Kick your spaghetti bend and butt back to Milan. Yeah. I can't watch him in anything else without just thinking of him as the over-the-top, the
chief, I think, right?
Yeah, the police chief in that movie.
Was it too much with the ethnic slurs? No, it was great. It was really much better.
I don't know what one thing I think of him as from, I don't know. I would say probably Glengarry Glen Ross. Have you guys watched his show with Michael Douglas? On Netflix, Kaminsky. No. The Kaminsky method. No. It's excellent. Yeah. It's excellent. Okay. It's really good. Him and Michael Douglas have really amazing chemistry together. They're great. Their banter is really excellent. You should check it out. Cool. Just watch one episode. If you don't like the first one, you won't like any of it.
Yeah, I liked him in Gross Point Blank as the analyst, the shrink.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yes. He's fantastic. He's so good.
I'll give it a shot. Don't shoot anything. Yeah, he's all angsty and worried about being killed.
Yeah, right. Well, because
and he was good in man. He was good in Little Miss Sunshine and Argo. I mean, they're both really good movies, good roles, but I cannot get past him as, you know, maybe it's the time of life for which I saw it or the fact that I love that movie, but I just can't get past The Way I Married an Ex-Murderer.
I haven't seen that probably since shortly after it came out, or you know, when it came out on video. I probably watched it a few times, but I haven't seen it since. It's been a
while. We can fix that.
It's on my list. Yeah. Someday it will. Well, not next, but it is on my list of probably 30 movies we should review.
Yeah.
So it's very, this one is very watchable.
Sorry. But, let me just point out one more thing. I forgot. Glengarry Glen Ross and The Rocketeer are the two things I think of as Alan Arkin from, and they're made 1 year apart. I've always loved The Rocketeer, and so yeah, that's why I think of Alan Arkin. Anyway,
you and 100 other people that love that movie.
Yeah, you know, how come no one knows about that movie? Is it bad? Do I love a bad movie?
I'm not touching that one.
Is it possible? I love a bad movie. I mean, that's unheard of.
I a lot of people were disappointed with The Rocketeer. I'll just say that. I think I saw it in the theater. I think so. I mean, it was good. It was good. Who's that guy? He's not been in a lot of stuff.
Campbell.
Yeah.
He's been in a few things over the years. He's worked steadily, I would say.
I'm not sure why.
He was in a terrible sci-fi-ish, horror-ish kind of show called Helix. That came out a few years ago. It was on I don't know what channel. It was on FX or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So he hasn't been a leading man very much.
No, not really.
I don't think he was the problem with The Rocketeer. I just think it's curious that it doesn't really come up much.
Anyway, we're talking about Glengarry Glen Ross.
Right. And how watchable that is. And it's it's not appropriate for kids.
No.
What's the other question we like to ask?
Oh, Sam, where can you watch it?
Oh, where? Yes. you get it?
You have to rent it.
It's on HBO if you have an HBO subscription.
HBO, okay.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
Otherwise.
You know a guy that knows a guy.
I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who has a login I used.
That was a joke.
I actually subscribed to HBO.
I do on and off when pretty much with Game of Thrones done, I turned it off. But there's good stuff on there, I guess.
Yeah. We just started watching the Watchmen show on HBO. It's excellent.
Oh yeah, that's what I want to watch. Yep.
Like,
all right. Have we beat Glengarry and Glenn Ross to death?
I don't know. Have we? Did we answer all our questions?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most important one, you pointed out the flaw of the movie.
Yeah. I'm glad we got to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
That's what has made this the best review we have done yet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hands down. Yeah.
It is by far the best.
Yeah. That was the cherry on top.
Yeah. I don't know that we'll ever top this.
Oh. No.
But let's try.
Yeah.
What are we going to try with? Yeah.
What's the next one?
All right. We're going with the first foreign film. I got to tell you that I was like, okay, I want to get a movie from the end of the 90s. I want to see what, and so I was like, what's the last possible film we could review? Do you know what movie was released on December 31st?
I know what this is. I'm not going to steal your thunder though.
No, this is not the answer. This is just,
no, I know the answer. I'm just, go ahead.
So December 31st, 1999.
Yeah.
No idea.
Sean, you have a guess?
No.
The Virgin Suicides. And I was like, really? I was like, okay, that's a really stylistic film, but ultimately I thought it was kind of boring. I don't want to go back and watch that again, so it's not my pick. But that was the last release in 1999. There's other ones that are really close. You know, the week before, which I almost picked one. Galaxy Quest was a week before.
I love that movie.
So, well, I haven't seen it since it came out, but I remember really enjoying it too. But I was like, I don't want to do that. So, Sean, you know what I'm going to pick?
Yes. I do. It's a foreign movie. It's a French movie.
You bet it is.
Is it Amelie?
With a very famous actor in it.
Oh.
No. Amelie, you know, is too late. Amelie's after 2000. So I looked it, because I also looked at Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which is also released in 2000. So, yeah.
It's got Hellboy in it.
Yes, it does. Speaking of it, Ron Perlman in it.
Oh, City of Lost Children?
Yep.
I haven't seen that in forever.
So
that's our next one?
You're watching it again.
That's great. I don't really remember it, hardly at all.
Listeners,
I love it.
If you watched Glengarry Glen Ross and you hated it, we're going to redeem ourselves with a crazy French movie.
It is great. Terry Gilliam of French movies. So I'm excited to watch it again.
Yeah. That's a good pick.
Yeah.
All right.
I like that. Well, hold on. I just like to point out that I like that it's of his movies. Well, not exactly obscure. It's certainly not as well known as something like Amelie or Alien Resurrection or even Delicatessen.
Mm-hmm.
Or A Very Long Engagement.
Delicatessen, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen Delicatessen more often and more recent than I have City of Lost Children, so I like that. I probably wouldn't watch others. It gives me a good excuse to go revisit.
Good. I was kind of hoping you hadn't seen it. I was like, this might have a chance that you actually didn't see this movie.
What? Come on.
Well, I don't know. It's a chance.
There's a chance. That's true. There's always a chance.
What was all this more one like, in a million talk?
Yeah, more like one in a million. Oh, God. Like, found a nice knowledge base. It's like about 2 inches long of the same exact stuff. Of all the things in the world, Sean and I know 2 inches of material, and it's all the same.
By episode 200, we're going to devolve into just spitting quotes at each other. I look forward to it.
All right. And, until next time.
All right. See you guys.
Thank you for
time.
Listening. This has been
The Film with Three Brains.
Signing off.
Bye. It's The Film with Three Brains.